Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this version of Masonic Effects. Just reminded that the opening music, West End Blues, is 96 years ago. It was recorded in 1924. Amazing. Still resonates. Until Louis, there hadn't been anybody doing those trumpet riffs, and so he was, did he know any better? Well, I'm glad he decided to innovate, just put a bit of himself into it. Jazz has been a bit different ever since, but this is no ordinary day. This is the 11th of February. 37 days until spring, where I sit here in the Northern Hemisphere. That's on the 20th of March, and it will be the same amount of time to the fall autumn in the Southern Hemisphere. A shout out here to our listeners in Uganda and India and the Philippines, and the very solid support from Russia. Thank you very much for our brethren in Russia for tuning in. Now, of course, the United Kingdom is consistent in its attention to us, as is the Masons from France. And did I mention India? Probably did. Brazil? To be able to, I think of this as embracing the world with a common purpose. At the end of your workday, did you find that life was just a joke? There's a difference between being foolish about our lives and enjoying them. As the old saying goes, enjoy every minute. There's plenty of time to be dead. It's a remarkable. I'm glad that you're here today. And we have a really solid, commentary today, Dreamer Made Real. And it is another... Oh man, it's another aspect of you, of us, of the order, and today the poetry reading is by a contemporary of William Shakespeare, 15th century. He was born the year before Shakespeare was. His name is Michael Drayton. I don't know how many of us may have heard his work, but I have a piece selected that I think is notable, but to kick us off a little bit, I've been you know, trying to sample good, what I consider, you can tell my ear, what I consider to be decent jazz. And, you know, I really am so, the baseline for it all is what came out of jazz in the United States so many, many decades ago, generally by men, people who were oppressed racially and economically, and this innovative style of music, some of it sorrowful, some of it just toe-tapping, enthusiastic, a celebration in a way, the funeral droge of New Orleans, that celebration of repatriation with the creator. There's so many aspects of jazz, and it's for those reasons that I was wanting to select a style of music that had an element of universality to it. For a while, temporarily, I thought James Brown would do it, because who can listen to James Brown without... I quickly realized that there were musicians around the world that were getting into their groove and really rocking it. And it wasn't transcendent. It was very inclusive, very accessible, but it was transcendent. So today, just sit back. This is from a recording in Belgium in 1964 by none other than Dexter Gordon, and it's called Lady Bird. I think you'll like it. Thank you. George Grunz on piano and Guy Pedersen on bass. Just incredible, eh? It's a few little messages for you to I want to bounce off you. Khalil Gibran said this: "The teacher who is indeed wise does not bid you to enter the house of his wisdom, but rather leads you to the threshold of your mind." I'm just reflecting on settling. You know that notion that we do just what's good enough? We settle. There are some that do that intellectually, some that do that emotionally, some that do that materially. When it happens, Masonry, our order, tends to be rather clear about this. We're part of a process and a way, a presence that is embraces us in self-improvement. We don't gain from it unless we're, well, to quote a different analogy, unless we're working the program, we're not going to benefit from it, are we? Let's say we're here to learn Latin. Well, if you only show up for registration and never come again, two things come to mind. What was your motivation in the first place? And did you think you could learn Latin without putting in some effort? And good teachers will not want to waste their time on poor students. Neither will they be dismissive when they find somebody struggling. Realize that the people that we are introducing into our lodges may or may not have been adequately prepared for expectations. And I think in some jurisdictions, we tend to be very thorough about the pre-education, the prerequisites for an enjoyable Masonic experience. And so, in other times, we may be well-intended but hasty. The idea is not passive. This is an active process. So it's not like buying a ticket and going to the movie, and sitting in the theater and walking out. This is more than about commitment. Masonry has to do with why things are happening. Why? What's your motive for joining Masonry? Well, we need to have at least, we're not releasing any secrets, but unless we have some degree of scholarship, we can't possibly, some degree of knowledge. Call it that. Don't get your panties in a wad about the word scholarship. Some deeper understanding about what the order is, not just in a subjective sense, but big picture. It hasn't lasted for hundreds of years, for 500 years, because of my assumptions or my conceits about the order, nor yours, to be quite candid. There's something that has had resonance, has had currency over the centuries. And we need to be able to take our water dipper and dip into that pond every so often, into that stream, and drink from it. John Ruskin said it this way: "The purest and most thoughtful minds are those which love color the most." We cannot continue. We cannot expect that we react and respond ordinarily, and we're going to get a different result. Far from it. Far from it. We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. That's another way that Albert Einstein is pointing out that we need to be able to go, in a sense, outside of ourselves, to be able to exercise our philosophies. if we are teaching, then we need to, as you know, we need to be able to embrace the notion of debate. Debate. We were taught this by 5th century BC, by the Greek philosophers. So this is not a new notion. That little tidbit of history may be new, may be unique, but the idea that we can hold, Confucius did it 25 centuries ago, the idea that we can hold and embrace a philosophy without applying it, he thought didn't resonate with him. And in great Chinese philosophers' worldview, we had a responsibility to recognize the ritual, to do the ritual very well as an honor to our ancients, and to properly communicate the message. We cannot, unless we're actively working as Masons, we are not going to be able to benefit from the pool of knowledge. And it is insufficient to say that we dress up, we put on a tuxedo, and make go to a special, very unique gathering periodically, and that's enough. It's not. A life unexamined is not worth living. According to Socrates, apply it to yourself. What he's saying, this tells us, is unless we begin to look at ourselves deeply, warts and all, and admit that there are flaws in what we see, and admit that we need to be able to pull up our sleeves and do something, although we may not know what to do at the time, the first thing we do is we commit to that improvement. And to do that, we cannot approach the world with hubris. We cannot approach our fellow man with that sense of schadenfreude. You know, you're going to enjoy the pain and suffering of others. And we cannot move forward if we're channeled by temper. Somebody must have whispered in your ear about the Pythagorean school. Certainly here we've done it not too long ago with talking about the Pythagorean diet, the vegans, the original vegans. This is they were telling us to hush, just hush, watch. And learning to do that, it means telling yourself, going out on a day and actually bringing that idea up in your mind. Instead of chattering away, that you will be attentive, not in a meager and demeaning way. If that's the way this comes across to you, you really need to sit down and re-examine yourself. There's nothing demeaning or controlling about Masonry. This is the banquet that enriches the experience, not gluttony, but enriches the mind. Well, okay, so maybe some of you are inclined to the logicism school of Bertrand Russell. Okay, that mathematics is a form of logic. In other words, the philosophy was a form of mathematics. Yes, okay. Or you could embrace the idea of the Pythagoras, that mathematics is expressed in music. Well, we've done a fair amount of research on that lately. But what we need to be able to also grasp is this sense of getting over ourselves, getting over our own sense of mediocrity, and just giving ourselves a chance. Just a chance, so that every day you're doing something just a little better than you did yesterday, but that it's a daily event every single day. I remember as an entered apprentice or fellow craft hearing somebody say that I had a responsibility teaching me that I had responsibilities to study masonry every single day. And at first I was applying it to this sort of schoolboy sense. Well, I had to sit down and study, and I had to give something else up. Well, after giving that some thought, I realized that I can't do that. I can't progress if I feel that there's a zero-sum game. Like, I have to give something else up in order to get ahead. I don't give it you. And a good Mason doesn't give anything up. You embrace. You want to be there. You want to search it out and get used to the idea. If every morning you have to wake up and tell yourself that's your motivation, then do it every single morning until you get it. The old Chinese proverb fits here. It's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. Sit back and fill your mug with something that you enjoy. I'm sitting here with a nice double espresso, and maybe I'll plunk something into it while we're off air. This is Kenny Burrell, There Will Never Be Another You. Beautiful, beautiful tune. Thank you. Deep breath, Kenny Burrell. There. Let me share with you a sonnet by Michael Drayton. Born in 1563. I'm going to talk about the ideas that contributed to Masonry. Why the Grand Lodge was formed in 1770. What were the drivers? Spontaneous enlightenment. But he was a contemporary of Shakespeare. And he was born in Warwickshire, where Shakespeare was, as a matter of fact. Must have been the drinking water there, or maybe something about the eggs. But he wrote a great number of poems, including a long verse of a travelogue about England. But his poetry isn't read much now, was once. So here's a sonnet that it begins, "Since there's no help, come let us kiss and part." It's written by a fellow who realizes that the relationship he's had with his loved one is over. But here, and listen to him. It's deft enough, you know, and just analyze it for yourself. "Since there's no help, come, let us kiss and part. Nay, I have done. You get no more of me. It's over. And I am glad, yea, glad with all my heart, that thus so cleanly I myself can free. Shake hands forever, cancel all our vows, and when we meet at any time again, be it not seen in either of our brows that we one jot of former lover retain. Now at the last gasp of love's latest breath, while his pulse failing, passion speechless lies, when faith is kneeling by his bed of death, and innocent is closing up his eyes, now if thou wouldst, when all have given him over, from death to life, thou mightst him yet recover, you might fall in love again." Life too short for Masons to believe that love and happiness is achievable, and then being able to pass it on. It is one of the charges to us to pass this on to our community. Well, you can't do that unless you have some sense of self-love, and we can't do that unless we begin to understand what in the hell we're talking about. What in the hell we're talking about. And to grow up about it. We're not little children. We're not of our past. We are of today. We are what we were, but we have, as the Creator is my witness, we have evolved. Every single time I look in the mirror, I'm reminded of that. Here. Get this, hey? What were the conditions that they gave rise to Masonry? It's highly likely that the spread of free and accepted Masonry around the world was the establishment of the Grand Lodge of England. And this event is customarily held to have taken place in London on St. John the Baptist Day on the 24th of June, 1717. But what was the establishment of the premier Grand Lodge of England the result of? A note found attached to a manuscript copy of the National History of Wiltshire in 1685 in the hand of its author, antiquarian John Arbery, says, "This day, May 18th, being Monday, 1691 after Rogation Sunday, is a great convention at St. Paul's Church of the Fraternity of the Adopted Masons, where Sir Christopher Wren is to be adopted as a brother." 1691. This is also reported in manuscripts of the contemporary diarist John Evelyn, who goes on, "Sir Christopher Wren, architect of St. Paul's, was at a convention at St. Paul's on the 18th of May, 1691, of Freemasons, adopted a brother of that society, sure have been kings of this sodality." So Wren, most famous of the architect, as the architect of St. Paul's, had been president of the Royal Society between 1680 and 1682. He was a famous architect who found himself founded architecture considerably less compelling than his other scientific interests, especially microscopy and biology. And he was an artist. He liked the challenge of most architecture once he had mastered the geometrical content and bored him. As he was adopted as an accepted Freemason, then the very late date of that adoption, whatever that may have been, would be consistent with all that we know of accepted Freemasonry fellowship practice. Accepted Masonry, unlike the Masonry of Scotland, was not, as far as we can tell, directly connected to the process of educating stone masons. And on the other hand, this adoption granted to the Great Wren may have been more in the manner of the Scottish practice of admitting gentlemen to a stonemason's lodge or body. Perhaps the assembled craftsmen experienced a fit of springtime enthusiasm and offering a sign of thanks for the work Wren's designs had provided for them. We can only hope they were inspired. This is brilliant. But this adoption was certainly not an invitation to run the business of individual lodges. It was most likely a dignity granted to in gratitude for Wren's role in handling disputes between craftsmen and employers over matters of wages and contracts. We know that Wren was the place of last resort in such disputes during this period. Remember, he had to argue in court in Parliament where they wanted to cut his funding when they were midway through. Today, we can look at those people that made that argument. The accountants make that argument and challenge their short-sightedness, their awkwardness. Today, if they had prevailed in all earnest, as they are every single day, St. Paul's wouldn't exist. No, he was right to make the argument. And the same kind of conditions go on today. We fret over the ordinary. We fret over the risk. The uninspired, the people that have very little imagination, cannot see it. They don't grasp it. For them, everything artistic, everything creative is risk. And yet they may enjoy it when the risk has actually been fulfilled. The difference between that lot and Masons is Masonry is where you develop that can-do attitude that no matter what happens, core group of people have the combined talent to prevail without pointing fingers, without ridicule, without divisiveness. They come together out of common purpose with the confidence to let each other know that if they're supporting a good idea, they need to be able to make it work, no matter. And to think that something is not going to go sideways or pear-shaped and isn't going to have complications, well, that's just either stupid or naive or inexperienced speaking. If we're talking about children, then we can say it's inexperienced. But once we teach the boy, then it's no longer an experience. This isn't then a matter of paying attention. Oh, you don't want to pick that up, as my sister would say. You know, you might drop it. You might drop it. Well, that's not helpful right now. Something bad might happen. Something bad might happen. Well, that's not helpful either. That kind of speaker is a person that's on the outside of the team. On the outside, may protest. I'm part of it, but man, your actions, what you're saying, your words are what conveys the meaning, the true revelation of you. Masonry, the strength of Masonry is that can-do purpose. We will do it. So right now in the jurisdiction I'm in, we're pouring money into research on to find the source, a way of reducing clinical retardation. How do we end that? That secret that is still out there. Well, it may not have a great deal of appeal. It may not be populist. It may not be trending on any kind of social media, but it's essential. And it's hard. And quite frankly, if it wasn't hard, it wouldn't be dignified for us to take it on. But so what? It's hard. And so what? We have to put money into it for year after year. We have committed to this. And we will continue to do that until we find an answer. And we are, what, either heroic or silly enough to think that this is a question that has an answer and we just don't know it yet. And for every year that our scientists fail to find the answer, they come one step closer. In other words, we embrace the scientific method. Now, the bean counters amongst us would never go down this path. They would never go down this path because it's about commitment. It's not about return. It's about commitment. It's about belief. It's about hope that we will get there. We will make things better for some people that don't have a voice to beg for it, to ask for it, to say that they deserve it. We know that. We know that as human beings. The compassion in us tells us this. No, we're not frivolous and ridiculous about it. We need our sycophants. We need our bureaucrats in the room. We always do. We need accountable management. We have constitution. But where is it written? It is written nowhere that should dominate. What we fail to, I think, remember is why that is the case. Why did Masonry happen? Why did the constitutions become so important? Like, what was the source of them? Or was it, as we were finding out here, a process, a product of ongoing processes? So accepted Masonry, directly connected to the process of educating stonemasons. And the adoption was certainly not an invitation to run anything. We know that Wren was the place of last resort. He solved things. He was personable. He had, what, he was an intelligent person. Was he a polymath? He was intelligent. You go to any intelligent person and ask them for the solution. You don't go to somebody that's going to nod and blink and go along with everything that's coming out of you. Like, oh my goodness. So the debate goes on. Was Wren a Mason or not? Well, you decide. Pull on your big boy pants and you decide. And you're going to hear speculation otherwise, yeah? We'll come back to that in a little bit, yeah? About the takeovers in the Constitution, like the Constitution of 1723. But first, we had some business with symbolism, didn't we? We certainly did. We were just about to tip into the work on the Kabbalists. This was a showstopper for me when I was introduced to an actual body, the Rosicrucians, that opened up the mind and the challenge of understanding Kabbalah. And this, for me, was like understanding statistics. It takes me a long time. I have to understand things conceptually, and then I get it. Some people, I know, you just nod along and go along with whatever anybody says, and I cannot do that. I don't know how to do that. I have to understand the concept. The context of what is being taught to me. Then, yeah. But first, let's listen to a little bit of Lester Young and Bill Harris. This is called Pennies from Heaven. This is an old tune. In the background, you'll hear a very young Buddy Rich. He's no longer with us. You'll also hear Ray Brown and Hank Jones. Have a little sip of this, and then we'll get into another bit of the work for today. Eh?
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm.
Spoken, eh? What a quartet. That was Bill Harris on trombone, in case you were wondering. And Ray Brown on bass. Steaming. Jeez, I've almost lost my place. Wouldn't be the first time, would it? Here, we had to continue to probe a little bit about symbolism. Why did you do you think that during the following the period of the Reformation and into Enlightenment, and just around the before the Reform, art flourished during the Baroque and during the Rococo periods? Do you wonder why? Yeah, what was that the source of? You know, what was that the product of? What was the product of something? I'll reveal all coming up in March at General Mercer Lodge here in Toronto, and I'll put it all on the line for you, and let you chew away at my leg about the work. Here we're going to talk today about the Kabbalists. It's another sect, and it dealt in hidden and mysterious ceremonies. So of course, anything like that's got to get my attention. But you know, I don't do things I don't follow up just because somebody says, you know, it's mysterious and secret and hidden. If we want to recognize the secrets of our order and we want them to remain secret, then shut the hell up. That's it. So people could go and research everything they want about the craft, but it's what comes out of us that puts it into context. So hush, children. Be quiet. At least learn. Tache, eh? Shh. And silence. That's it. It's a big secret. The big secret to the world out there is how hard that is to do. But the Kabbalah is another matter, a deeper matter, that tree of life, the roots as below, as above, so below, you know. It dealt in these secrets. The secrets, because they were hard, you know. It means you have to sit down and piece by piece put this together in your mind and discuss it. The Jews had a great regard for this science and thought they made uncommon discoveries by means of it. Yep. These were not stupid people. They divided their knowledge into speculative and operative. David and Solomon, they say, were exquisitely skilled in it, and nobody at first presumed to commit it to writing. So there was an oral history. But what seems most to the present purpose, the perfection of their skill, consisted in what the dissector calls lettering of it, or by ordering the letters of a word in a particular manner. The last instance I shall mention is that of the Druids in our own nation. They were the only priests among the ancient Britons. In their solemnities, they were clothed in white, and their ceremonies always ended with a good feast. Pomponius Mela relates to them that their science was only an effort of memory, for they wrote down nothing. And they never failed to repeat many verses which they had received by tradition. Caesar observes that they had a head who had sovereign power, and this president exercised a sort of excommunication, attended with dreadful penalties upon such as either divulged or profaned their mysteries. It mattered. The passage is reproduced without the italics, in which many words, possibly given for emphasis, appear in the original, and without the reference notes. The only claim to descent in this passage, taken from a pamphlet on the system of the Pythagoras. The dissector referred to is Samuel Pritchard, the author of Masonry Dissected, to which this pamphlet is a reply. The pamphlet seemed to accept what Pritchard says and to attempt to justify such a system by showing that such practices were common in the ancient mysteries. on which the author of the pamphlet was uncommonly well read. In the original, he indicates the classic authors that he quotes by direct mention, and also in the separate notes his sources. In addition, he includes mentions of then current works of reference, that this depth of study was undertaken by some of those involved in the masonry of the times, not merely justification, but actual influence of the old mysteries and the development of masonry. The pamphlet was produced in 1738 edition of Dr. Anderson's Constitutions, and that is no doubt the source where many later writers used and from which they developed ideas contained in it. William Preston, who was born in 1742, and he was initiated in 1763, and he died in 1818, and he used the Egyptian references in part word for word and based some of his historical references to the Druids in their mention of the pamphlet. And Reverend George Oliver was born in 1782 and initiated in 1803 and died in 1867, also takes up the Egyptian and Druidical themes and develops them in several of his books. It was not just to the author of the 1730 pamphlet that the old mysteries were known. The Masonic writers of the last part of the 18th century included much of a moral and esoteric nature which actually became incorporated in the ceremonies as they were practiced at the end of the century. Changed since then. And these authors showed a similar depth of knowledge, often, very often, referring to points other than those contained in the pamphlet. And William Hutchinson's Spirit of Masonry contains the following. We find those sages and select men to whom were committed and who retained the light of understanding and truth, unpolluted with the sins of the world, under the denomination of Magi among the Persians, wise men, soothsayers and astrologers among the astrologers during the Chaldeans, philosophers amongst the Greeks and Romans, and Brahmins amongst the Indians, druids and bards among the Britons. And with the chosen people of God, Solomon shone forth in the fullness of human wisdom. Why the Jewish influence? In the references to the old mysteries quoted from the pamphlet, A Defense of Masonry, it is probable that those of the Essenes and Kabbalists are the most significant. These are both Jewish sects whose practices were well documented. And Dr. Anderson, in his Constitutions of 1723, spends a good deal of space on Jewish history, and especially on the building of King Solomon's Temple, which was almost the central theme of Anderson's masonry. It is not surprising that the practices of Jewish sects, which had moral aims thought to be similar to those of Masonry, might influence Masonic development. Nor was Anderson the only Mason in the century following to show interest in Jewish matters and the Hebrew language. Two especially spring to mind. Lawrence Dumont, who for centuries Grand Secretary of the Ancients Grand Lodge, and the Duke of Sussex, first Grand Master of the United Grand Lodge. Dermot became a major influence on the Ancients Grand Lodge soon after its inception in 1751, and one of its officers for over 40 years. He had some acquaintance with the Hebrew tongue and called the constitutions of his Grand Lodge by a Hebrew name, Ahimon Rezon, although no one seems very certain of what he meant to convey. The Duke of Sussex was a very religious man and a considerable student of Hebrew. The catalogs of his library, when sold after his death, show a great number of books relating to Jewish history, many of them manuscripts in Hebrew, and some on the subject of the Kabbalah. The periodical resurgence of questions relating to the Jews in Britain during the 17th and 18th century may have contributed to an interest in their history. It was the year 1656 that saw the resettlement of the Jews in this country. Even then, they were regarded as aliens, but a purposeful proposal regarding the naturalization of Jews in 1753 caused another upsurge of interest, which continued until the turn of the century. A Defense of Masonry mentions Antiquities of the Jews by Flavius Josephus. There had been editions in English of this work in 1655 and 1670, while another was published in 1737 and reissued in 1800. That there was other reference to Josephus' work in the later years of the century is shown by at least three of the additional degrees which arose at that time, having their ritual based on incidents of his book. Ah, you have it. We're getting on with the show, aren't we? So just before we tear into the next tune, let me take you to the commentary for today, Dreamer Made Real. Self-development is not for everyone. Those faced with hunger and danger experience existential immediacy. Some development may be a lesser notion. What is important to your existence? That is a question for the ages. If, metaphorically, we seem unable to stand up for low aspirations, in our context, we are surrounded by people who left totalitarian conditions, attracted by a culture where the rule of law prevails. Predictable, articulated standards of living and coexistence, able and willing to defend. Where accountability failed, we experienced shameful violations of human rights. But in this land, we fix and we enjoy a good life. One needs to be intelligent, to be interested, engaged, to contribute and benefit. And within that framework, a subculture has existed. One focused thoughts of liberty, equality, and justice prepared to activate. Working together for common purpose, we remain shrewdly apolitical, understated activists. When we do not know what to say to fools, we say nothing. Provocateurs find little benefit poking at us. Muscular discussion is met with indifference. Disciplined self-control is an unassailable threshold. And silence cannot be broken. Nuanced acts of charity, thinking big, acting small scale, breaks out spontaneously, serving a need of our partners here on this journey through life, bringing light into darkness. That is masonry. Vadim Kolpakov, Russian fellow. Yeah, it's a cover of Django Reinhardt's tune. You know that you can tell the difference, can't you? Eh? This is a very enthusiastic. I don't know if Django Reinhardt, if we could say that his work was enthusiastic. Sometimes it was sort of delightfully indifferent. It was just he was throwing out notes and chords and phrasing. Beautiful piece of work. Thank you very much for that. And we're about to wrap up the show today on brotherly love and relief and truth. We wrestle with these things, and I don't think we need to at all feel embarrassed about bringing these concepts up. The rallying cry for us might be well to revisit our roots, and to stop settling for second best and mediocrity. And really, you think that accepting second best, we can tell if a man is struggling, if he's put himself out. We know that. This isn't about a binary code. This isn't about a book of accounts. Either you're doing it yes or you're doing it no. We account for effort. And so we take that into our thinking. That's embracing, particularly for a brother of the order. We support, we back our one another. You know that. So stand up and act like it. But acting like that and supporting one another is not offering false praise. It's not lying or misleading somebody that's done less than their best. And if we know that somebody is capable of more, it is within our responsibility to say that. If we know that somebody is capable of more, we can also stop praising somebody and start encouraging them. What do we encourage? Effort, ingenuity, dedication, diligence. And as we start to get stronger and encourage the talent of everybody, that does not, apart from a few fretful people that are doing the jazz hand things running around the back of the lodges, oh, the sky is falling, apart from those folks, just let them go. They won't hurt anybody and they won't hurt themselves. But the truth be known is that encouraging this kind of intensity does not lead to chaos. It leads to a studied, you think about it. If that were the case, then all of the major schools of thought would have just decayed like a radioactive molecule. Far from it. This is a building process. This is the orchestra. Only you're not just sitting in the back. This isn't high school or a public school. You're not a schoolboy anymore. This is your opportunity to take the instrument, you, and refine the process. But begin to do the work. You need to be able to separate this part of your existence out and begin to value yourself. And say that very candidly. Are you worth the effort? Well, if you don't believe it, you're expecting everybody else to treat you as if? Big boy pants time. Big boy pants time. Here, we'll. I hope I'll see you again next week. Thank you. The support to the Rosicrucian Societies in Anglia, thank you. I'm just wonderful. And you're also a painful intellectual experience. The pile of books that I need to study to, in order to understand, is just amazing. So I'm a very grateful Mason, and I'm a very grateful person. I'm thankful for everything that I have, and I want to extend that to each and every one of you. I look forward to being able to share our time in Lodge and greeting. And the next time we meet, it's my round. This is a French jazz singer, Vera Adimi. I think you'll like it. See you soon, eh? Elle est dure. Yeah. See you again soon.